Welcome to the U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast, the legal English podcast for non-native English speakers that helps you improve your English listening, improve your legal English vocabulary, and build your knowledge of American legal culture.
Welcome to U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Horowitz.
And today we continue our series of interviews with multilingual lawyers.
And today's guest is Maria Garay. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yep.
Garay?
Okay. Yep.
Maria Garay, a tax law associate at the law firm of Fried Frank in New York City. She is a graduate of the University of Navarra in Spain. Ooh, I'm not usually good at rolling my R's, but I think I got it.
You did a great job.
Okay. She completed her tax LLM at New York University School of Law in 2018. Prior to her current work, Maria also previously worked as a tax lawyer at Ernst & Young, or EY, as I think it's now called, for over 3 years. And prior to that, she was a tax lawyer for the global law firm of Clifford Chance in their Madrid, Spain office. And we will have Maria's LinkedIn profile or LinkedIn link in the show notes if you want to connect with her. Welcome, Maria. It's so nice to have you as a guest.
Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm really happy that I was able to join this opportunity. I'm here to talk about everything that you want to talk about.
All right. Well, you are the first tax lawyer we've had on the show. And I know, other than the fact that I pay taxes, I know very little about tax law. And I know there's a whole nother vocabulary. So we're hoping you can explain the entire vocabulary of tax law in 30 minutes or
okay,
less.
I can do it. I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. So now first I want to say we were introduced by a friend of mine and a former guest on this podcast, Clara Solomon. Yeah. And why don't you tell us how you know Clara?
So Clara was in our professional opportunities team at NYU. She will connect and be the link between the students that they were doing an LLM, specifically LLMs, and she really devoted herself to try to connect international students with job opportunities in the United States. So this will be for somebody that wanted to stay in the US to trying to find a job. So Clara will be there to help us with our resume, try to connect us with different networking options, talk to people and things like that. So yeah, so she's actually a really important resource for people like me.
Oh, good to know. Okay. And let me ask you another question. What languages do you speak?
So I'm originally from Spain. So Spanish is my mother tongue, is my native language. I speak English. Right now, I like to think that I'm almost in a bilingual level, not just professional, like a little bit above. And then
Let me ask you a question. When you dream, do you dream in English or Spanish?
I dream in English now. Which is great because everybody, it's funny because you mentioned that because there was, when I was younger, that was like the myth. If you know a language enough, then you will dream in English. And now I do everything in English. My full 90% of my life is in English. So yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, I used to think it was about dreaming, but this is my new standard for bilingualism. If I give you a math problem, 43 times 27, I just made that up. Okay. Do you do that? And you do it in your head. Do you do it in English or in Spanish?
So that will be, I think I'm a mix in between. Because as maybe we can talk about that later, we were talking in the pre-show, I am not very good with numbers for being a tax lawyer. So I will be like doing my numbers in my head. And then sometimes I do it in Spanish. And what is funny is that when I'm running and I'm counting the seconds left in a sprint, I count them in Spanish. So I guess when I'm put into like extreme stress, I guess I go back to my native language and I go like 5, 4, and I do it in Spanish because I'm like, let this sprint bit over because I just want to go on.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay, so when your mind gets stressed, the default underlying it all is that base of Spanish that you grew up
in. I would say so, yep, definitely.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay, and what countries have you lived in? You lived in Spain?
I lived in the US. I lived, now I'm located in New York City, but I lived in Seattle before for an exchange program when I was in the school. And then I lived in Milan in Italy for 8 months when I was, another exchange program that I had when I was studying in Spain. Yep.
Do you speak any Italian?
I have a little bit because it's really easy for us. Like Spanish and Italian, it will be very similar. And then I'm sorry and apologize to every Italian speaker that was ever in this podcast before me, because they will be like just completely different language. So it has nothing to do with us. But when I went to Italy, it was kind of like if I speak Spanish slow enough, they will be able to understand me and it will be similar for them. So
if you just speak Spanish like you're singing a song or something, then it sounds Italian, right?
Exactly. They have that strong accent that makes it so special.
And just use your hands a little bit more.
Which I know that they cannot see me, but that's exactly what I'm doing right now.
And what about, do you speak French?
So French was it was like a subject at school. I did like 6 years of French. At a point, I was able to have full conversation, read and write, same as Basque, which I am from the north of Spain. I'm from the Basque country. So we have our own language out there. And then exactly, I started studying Basque when I was three. But then it's such a complicated language that if you don't practice, then obviously it goes away. So when I went to school, University of Navarra, when I went to study law, like I didn't practice enough and then it went out.
Do you have relatives that still speak Basque, maybe older?
Yeah. Yep.
And if you see them, can you communicate in Basque with them?
I mean, so the city, the area that I am right now is not like, it's like my family do not live in like villages. The difference will be like, there is older people that will only be able to speak Basque. I don't have like my grandparents were able to speak Spanish, so I never had to go through that. But I have aunts and uncles that are like my parents, sisters and brothers, that they speak Basque as good as they speak Spanish. So like, and they actually speak in Basque with their kids. So yeah.
You're never in the situation where you need to.
When I'm like, I don't know what to do. I mean, there is cases, and there is people that if you go like traveling a little bit, because the Basque country has like all those like rural areas, which is, it's really nice, and the scenery is magnificent. And you go there, and then their default will be to speak to you in Basque, and you are like, I mean, if I go now, I'll be like, yeah, there's nothing left. At the time, I was able to like handle myself. Pretty good.
So that's interesting. So you've acquired some languages, but you've also had a language slip from your brain. Do you think it's still here somewhere?
I think that if I go back to practicing, but I think I will not be able, I will have to go back to the street basis. And then of course, the moment I start back, it will probably like pick up. I always say that in order to make a space for all the law studies and all the business administration studies, I needed to like make a space in my brain for something else. And Basque was the first thing that got out of the window. It was like, yeah, you're not gonna need this anymore. Bye.
And what about English? How did you learn English?
So English was also like a subject. The school was like a mandatory subject. When I was to school, I studied English when I was three. And then but my parents kind of picked it up quickly that I like enjoyed it. I will sing the Backstreet Boys, that will be my jam. So it will be, and they will be like, oh, so she has a tendency to go to like English speaking music. And so they paid attention and thank them that they pay attention, because they started like giving me more opportunities. I started taking like additional classes, and my mom would like sign me for like all the Trinity College exams and the Cambridge University exams, and then taking the TOEFL and everything to like improve as much as possible. And then where I like made my English, I mean, not as good as, but like picked up, was when I went to University of Navarra, I have a law degree and a business administration degree. So the business administration was completely in English.
Ah, so that's where you really felt like
expanding the whole English vocabulary, being able to like talk about macroeconomics and cost association in English. So that was definitely it made an impact. And from there, like, I mean, Clifford Chance is a global firm, so a lot of our clients are international clients. So we had to work maybe like 70% of our job was in English, and then obviously the moment I came here, 99% of my job is English. So,
I was going to ask you, how much are you using Spanish or English in your work? Or how much does it help to speak Spanish at this point?
Currently, I mean, so the good thing is that obviously, the default is obviously English. But I always make aware that I am a Spanish native speaker. So when it comes to maybe some of our clients might be from Latin America, right? So they might not have access to English the same way as we do. That doesn't mean that they kind of do business with our clients or with us or whatever. So I always offer, like I would say, like, hey, I can speak, I can help translating, I can help drafting emails or jumping in conversation. So the link between a client, a Spanish speaker client, and an English speaking lawyer, I'm always there. And then I really use it on my pro bono work. There's a lot of pro bono work with Spanish native, Latin American. So that is, yeah, definitely.
Can you say more about your pro bono work?
So FreakFriend is the project that I've been working with. FreakFriend is they have been focusing on naturalization process and immigration process from people that might have special situations or have an irregular maybe immigration like history, and they want to try to clean the slate, make it right. So there is a lot of Latin America clients that we have that we work with legal aid. Mm-hmm. And then I always they always ask, and it's great because it's always an asset to be able to speak another language. They always ask, like, hey, who wants to help with this? And if somebody has other language capabilities, and I always say, like, I speak Spanish, so they I get assigned immediately with people that might not have a good level of English to understand what is going on. So
you're helping them with immigration law and yep. not tax law in that situation, right?
Yep, there is. Yep.
Oh, wow. That must be a real, and how do you feel about immigration law? How did you just
I have my own, as an international student and international lawyer in this country, we always have to go through, immigration is one of the main concerns. It's funny, when I was doing interviews to find the job, if I wanted to stay in the United States, immigration was always my main concern. Are you going to be able to sponsor my visa? Is it something that I'm going to have to leave after a year because my student visa will expire and you will not be able to help me with that, right? So immigration has always been part of it's connected to international or immigrants people here, obviously, in the United States. I have my own green card journey, so that connects with other people that are in the same situation. Yep.
So it's kind of just by being an international student in the U.S., you
get exposed to that. Yep.
You end up with a master's in immigration law, sort of.
definitely. Yeah.
I don't want to. You know, there's people that devote their lives to it and really know that immigration
law well. So they will know, of course. They will know way more than me, and I will never try to tell them what to do. But the fact that this is that actually one specific client that I'm working with right now, my colleague, my attorney, he's a US citizen, obviously. He never had to say something like that, and then he said, okay, so we have to help her for fill up the forms and things like that. And I'm like, I've done this, because I've done it for myself. So if help knowing what forms to prepare and things like that to make the job a little bit more easier.
Oh, wow. The people you work with must really appreciate that. So you're bilingual in English and Spanish. Are you bilingual in English and Spanish in terms of tax law as well?
I would say that at this point, I would love to think that yes.
You can go into all the tax terminology and the legal terminology and do all of that in Spanish as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there anything that's particularly hard to translate that doesn't translate well from Spanish to English or English to Spanish in terms of tax concepts?
So, I mean, the tax systems are so different between Spain and the United States that there is concepts here that we don't have in Spain. There's concepts here as, for example, tax bases. And then when I try to, that doesn't exist in the Spanish system, right? So, for example, when I was when we were at the LLM and I was trying to understand this new things, which NYU I would like to think that they did a great job trying to bring all those new concepts to people that they come from completely different systems and they don't have knowledge or even experience on all that, right? So when we talk about tax bases here in the United States, which is such a relevant concept for us, that doesn't exist in Spain. So I cannot there's no correlation on whether tax bases. Yeah.
Tax basis. Okay. Tax and basis. Just explain, how would you explain the term tax basis?
So the tax basis will be understood as how much the whatever widget that we're selling costs to the seller at the time, and mm-hmm. any additional tax amortization or depreciation or the tax elements that will have an effect on the value at the seller point in his tax accounting books.
Okay. And so that doesn't exist in Spanish tax law.
How we translate it how we estimate it here does not exist in Spain. We will have some type of like fair market value adjusted or something like that. But for me, it was one of the things like, what is this thing? Like, why is these people talking about adjusting and doing and adjusted tax basis and things like that? I'm like, whatever costs the seller minus whatever the purchaser want to pay, that is the gain or the loss of the transaction. Well, not in the United States. Yep.
any other good ones that don't translate well between?
So another thing that is so how we, but I guess that it's also, this is connects with like procedure, right? How we call like the different writs, the different like documents that we submit to the tax court or things like that. There is like the words in Spanish are like way more complicated than here. Like it would be just like a brief or a legal note or a legal or like an opinion or something like that. In Spanish, we go to like, it's like a whole complex word of like requerimiento, there's something weird, and I'm like, okay, that's, it's not even the same.
So yes. Like formal, there's like a bigger formal name for the document.
Yeah, for the things. And here it's like, oh, we just submitted a brief. Okay, good.
And what about word, like is amortization just amortación or something? I don't, I'm
something
sure
like that. Yeah.
How would you say that. Amortization instead?
Amortización.
Amortización.
Is the Z.
You also have the Spanish with a TH.
Yep.
On top of that, but I definitely do.
It's easy to relate one to the other. One of the words that I was, and this is not tax related, that I never thought that it would be so similar in Spanish and in English is astigmatism. Like the eye condition, astigmatism. Yeah, so I have astigmatism. When people ask me, oh, so what do you have? And I will be like, you know, that thing when you don't see the lines correctly or you don't see the depth or whatever. And people were like, astigmatism. And I'm like, oh, it's exactly so close between each other, because in Spanish it's astigmatismo, which is super close. And I was like, I would have never dreamed that that complicated word in Spanish would have translated so similar in English.
And that follows the general theory that Americans have for turning English words into Spanish words, which is adding an O at the end.
Yeah. That will take you places. You'll be like, yeah, okay, I kind of know what you're trying to say. Right. I'll figure it out. My husband does too. He's Hispanic, because he's Hispanic from like heritage. His family is Hispanic. He doesn't speak Spanish. So sometimes when it's like I'm talking to my mom and he hears some words and he picks up things, but then it's like you were talking about, and then he puts like the same word and then do like whatever, and I'm like, yeah, kinda, you can say.
Yeah, and I know there's the false cognates. My mother once, she lived in Guatemala, and she once told people that she was embarazado. I'm sorry, embarazada. But she did not mean pregnant. She meant
she was embarrassed, right?
That's the classic.
Yeah, and everybody were like, really? Okay, yeah. The way that is sensitive and sensible, and all those false friends that you have in English, those type of things don't exist in Spanish.
So when you were doing your LLM at your tax LLM at NYU, were there any what was the hardest part about doing the LLM program, and was any of it language related, or was it primarily about the content of the courses?
So how I feel like the academic, and you can elaborate in this way more than I can, the academic life in the United States is very similar to how we go to university, we go to school in like maybe I want to say civil law countries, because it's not only related to law, but like in, for example, let's use Spain, right? So here, the academic experience is so involved, right? It requires participation so much from the student. We have to do our readings. We have to prepare for class. You're going to get called if you are like, not, it looks like you're not actually following or paying attention. There's a risk of that. In law school, that is a thing, a fact, 100%. And not only in classes like con law, that you will be like, okay, so what are the level of scrutiny based on the jurisprudence, like the jurisprudence from the Supreme Court? And that would happen with like, so what is the three elements of whatever element of tax or whatever it is, right? So that is not only applies to like regular law, but also tax law that people tend to differentiate of like, oh, you guys do numbers in the board and then you solve problems that estimate tax cost. We will get the same way that somebody will call called in con law, I will get call called in international taxation one. So it's that stress of going to class of like, the professor is gonna ask me. And if I don't know the answer, then I'm gonna be in front of everybody. Everybody's gonna know that I didn't read or I'm not following. And maybe 75% of the class is not reading and is not following, but they didn't get call, so nobody else knows. So that was one of the things of like, that it was kind of a little bit more stressful because when the way we go to school more in Spain, and I think that Spain now is trying to add, like make it more like Americanized way of understanding like higher level of education. But yeah, so that was definitely one thing. And then again, for us, it was the tax concepts that I came from a completely different tax system that made it a little bit more complicated to adjust. But once you like pick up the basis, and the professors do a very good job of like building from the basis. So that was okay.
And if you had to pick one course that you thought was the hardest course in your tax LLM program, is that an easy one to pick, or do they all sort of fall into that category?
So from the in terms of content, I would say that probably it was between tax treaties with Professor Rosenblum or international taxation too with Professor Steins. They were difficult in terms of content because they were like the law is complicated in itself. So explaining it is also like picking up is difficult. From an English perspective, I would say contracts law was the hardest for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why contracts law?
So there was, again, similar with the concept of tax basis, there is concepts that will like apply and exist in contract liability or the formation of a contractual obligation here, that they do not exist when we study contracts in Spain or in the legal system as a Spanish. So like trying to translate the way, for example, a strict liability or a strict product liability and things like that, you will be like, I don't know, okay, that doesn't make any sense. In Spain, that will not fly when here is actually, it's a strict liability concept. So this, there's no question that you're gonna get paid if something like this happens, right? So, yeah.
So when you take contract law in your tax LLM program, are you taking it with the first year JD students in the law school? Or is there a separate one for the tax LLM?
No, it's with the JDs. Yeah, that was to be able to sit for the bar. I had to do like law or how do you call it? Not tax law, like more like regular law type of courses. Mm-hmm. I took con law, I did contracts law, and then like legal writing and things like that to be like, so you have like some requirements.
What was your experience with legal writing?
So it's funny because I feel like we come to legal writing always expecting that it will be better if we are like a little bit more complicated in drafting sentences and things like that. And professors, they always say like, hey, like we need to be straight to the point. Like US legal writing is not like elaborated sentences to end up in the same point. If this happened, then you need to say this happened specifically, right? How we, for example, I come from tax controversy practice a little bit in Spain, how we will draft legal writs and everything, it will be like, elaborated way of talking, kind of complicated, and then in Spain we'll be like, and here we'll be like, this is how it is, this is what happened, this is my client, this is all the facts, this is the legal application, therefore I am entitled to remedies and damages or whatever it is. And then So it was a shock. I was like, do I need to elaborate as much as I do in Spanish writing when I'm writing in English? And they were like, no, don't do that. That will not take you anywhere.
So you had to kind of learn to code switch, to switch yes. between this is how I write for a Spanish audience and this is how I write for an American legal audience.
Yep, it is. It's still like it is to this day that sometimes I like writing emails like at work and I call myself, I'm like, I'm overcomplicating this. Delete, 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 delete. And then let's write it straightforward. Hey, this is what we need from you. This is what we have. This is the cost. This is what we estimated based on this, this, and this. Do you agree? Can you confirm this? And things like that. And like, it's, nobody needs to be reading complicated emails that it will take them more than 2 seconds to understand what you need from them.
Yeah, I guess that is the trend.
How do you feel about it though?
I go through the same process. I was thinking, like, I mean, now I'm much better at it, but I think Americans too. Like, you start off writing something complicated, and then you develop a process where you're like, okay, I need to simplify this. But I think it's more intuitive. I mean, I've heard that about Spanish writing and French writing also, yep. that the emails tend to be more involved and yep. fancier and formal or something, whereas American email culture tends to be just very direct and to the
yep.
point.
Yep.
To the point of seeming almost rude, I would imagine, to Spanish.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I completely agree that this, they will be like, we always will be like, good morning, Mr. Whoever. And then, hey, this is what we need. 2 huge paragraphs. Please let me know if you need to talk. Thank you very much, Maria. And 90% of the times, he's going to need to talk because he didn't understand the 2 huge paragraphs that I put in the middle because there was no need to say all that. That would be a Spanish law practice. If I come here, I will see, like, when I joined, and this was, so my first working experience was at EY, and funny because in Fred Frank, we translated away, it will be, I will see associates or even the partners answering clients, like, I need this. Can we talk in 3, like, at 3 p.m.? Thanks. And that will be a straight, not like, hi, whoever, I'm working on this project. Can you let me know if you need to talk? We need to do, no. It will be like one line goes, not even hi, not even thank you, goodbye, nothing.
It's kind of like the difference between people who live in New York City versus people who live out in the country, right?
Yes,
it's
I agree. It's the New Yorker. It's the New Yorker vibe. It's in law practice now. It's in email yeah. writing. So
it's a different kind of politeness. It's being polite and respectful of somebody else's sort of time and mental
yes.
bandwidth.
Yes.
Versus
yes.
polite in terms of really genuinely engaging and asking about somebody.
Yep, definitely. So that takes a minute of like, hey, should I like? Am I being like too straightforward? And what yeah. I'm. When I'm asking about that, they were like, look, the person that we're writing to, they're always super busy. Everybody's super busy, always busy, right? So it was like, they don't have 2 minutes to understand something that it will take them 10 seconds to like just attach a PDF to an email and get you what you want. So don't do that because then the other person on the other side might get pissed. So you don't want to do that. Just tell them what you need and then that's it. Definitely applies to how we move in New York City. And then I went on vacation with my husband to San Diego, which is so quiet and so nice, California living, dreaming. And then I have most of my experience in the US is in New York. So he says I already picked up that New Yorker type of like rudeness, walking fast, come on, get out of my way type of thing. And we went to San Diego, which is illegal to jaywalk. If somebody can say that they jaywalk is New Yorkers, we just don't have time to wait for the light to change yeah. and the cars to come. It's like, I have to get there. I need to go. And we were like, okay, we're going to just jaywalk like quietly. And we were doing like, kind of like joking around. We're like, look, I'm being legal. I'm jaywalking. But yeah, it was completely different. We'd be like, why there is nobody in the street? Why everybody's so nice? People would say hi in the morning. And here in New York, if somebody says hi, it's like, somebody wants something. Don't
it's suspicious if people are too friendly
yes,
in New York.
Yes, yes, because they will want something for you. It's like, hey, can I talk to you? I'm like, yeah, no, you're gonna ask for money or something. I don't know, bye.
So wait, now you mentioned EY, and now you're at Fried Frank, which is yeah. a big global law firm, and you just joined in the last year. Has it yeah. been last year?
In November 2021. Yep. Yeah.
And what's the difference in the kind of work you're doing or the work style between a place like Ernst & Young, which is a, you know, one of the big giant global accounting firms, and being a tax lawyer at a law firm like Free Frank?
It is like night and day. Literally, the not only the type of work that I do, which I can start with that. So I joined Free Frank specifically on a coordinated tax asset management type of position. We work with funds most of the time. So it's not only giving them tax advice, but also fund formation and transfers of funds interest. I didn't do any of that when I was back at EY. EY is classic international taxation, tax advice from a US attorney to clients all over the world. We can have clients that are US multinationals or entities that they are outside and they want to make business in the United States. So the type of work is completely different. Also, accounting firms, they always play with the numbers. So I will be doing huge spreadsheets with guilty calculation models and something like that Fritz Frank does not even like think about it, right? So I don't do that there. They always leave, and that is the coordination. When people ask me, it's like, so we have transactions when there is it is always an accounting firm and there is always a law firm. So law firm will review the legal documentation, drafting contracts or whatever, the tax clauses of purchase agreement. And then the accounting firm will come in and say, hey, we are basing on your projections for the next 20 years, we have estimated that if you do this, this, and this, you will be saving whatever amount of money. So that is the accounting firm job. And that's what I used to do. There's also a huge difference in culture and how like EY is such a global international, there's people from everywhere, even in the New York office. Is really like, it's flexible, super relaxed. You will hear different languages be talked all over the place, right? In Free Frank, it's most US based. So most of the people and most of the associates at Free Frank are US residents. So that's a different, and then the culture is a little bit more like serious, more like prestigious in a way of like elevated. So that is a difference. And then you are in the personal relationship and you will think like, okay, so for example, I got lucky enough to actually, my office at Free Frank is next to the chair of the tax department. So he's like the boss of our bosses. And then you was like, okay, best of luck. I can just sit down next to the boss. Great. And then he's so nice and such like a close person that you will be like, okay, that man didn't look like he was gonna be so nice and so close from the outside. And then it just having like another colleague around. There is no difference of like, oh, I just joined and we're not gonna talk to you until you are like more or less experienced, nothing at all. Which sometimes is like the fear that people have about law firms.
Yeah.
The culture. I can say from my experience at Free Frank is that is not something that exists in our team in our, I cannot speak from other departments, other practices, but we don't have that. But EY was extremely, extremely flexible, extremely like close to like, it was just colleagues. We didn't have even offices, partners and junior ones will be sitting right next to each other on like open space.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Very non-hierarchical.
Not at all. Yep.
And what do you like about tax?
So I found that tax was the nexus between my law degree and my business administration degree. I had to kind of explain to my dad why I decided to do two full degrees when you're gonna have a wonderful life as a lawyer. So when I like tax law is the nexus, right? Because it's sometimes people and we can talk about this, lawyers are afraid of numbers, like yes. Like a regular like a lawyer that is not exposed to, and nowadays most of the practice have some type of like numerical aspect because obviously big transactions have a lot of money involved and things like that, right? But if you go back to the understanding that we have of a US lawyer litigator in court, I object, Your Honor, type of thing, that person, that picture we have is like, no, they don't play with numbers. They don't have anything to do. They see a balance sheet and they will like run. Yeah. So tax lawyers is the nexus between those two worlds. So I was able, I feel like, okay, I didn't waste whole ton of money and tons of years of study in finding something that it will, like, I will not be able to use it. Also, so there's two things. In this case, we have, in the United States, we have a solid code, which is the Internal Revenue Code. So we can always refer to the law, and that gives us the whole vibe of going back to a civil law type of understanding of the law, that everything is written and you can actually go and check it out. So tax law has that, but at the same time, it is so complicated that somebody that will read it, if you, as you mentioned, you don't know tax concepts apart from your personal taxes, right? Because people understand, they're kind of afraid of tax law, so they were always going to need tax lawyers. We are always going to end up paying taxes as long as we have a government. Right. So they're part of, like, we are in everything, right? So at the whole omnipresence of taxes in the whole system, it makes it they're always going to need somebody like me. That's fine.
You know, when I used to work in bankruptcy law, and I had a friend who said to me once, he said, he was like a business, you know, had started his own company. He said, you should go into tax law. And I said, why? And he goes, because in tax law, people are happy to pay you money because they know you're going to save them a lot of money.
Yes.
I was kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah.
But in a sense, it is. Why people want to pay you money so they can get a piece of a shrinking pie. Whereas if you're going to save me how much? Okay, sure, I'll pay you this much.
It's like, okay, you can take my money. Yeah. So, and then you will have clients that will get like kind of like mad because you're like, hey, well, how you have your structure right now? Either we do a ton of like work around it, and it's going to cost you a ton of money because we're going to have to work and do a lot of work from the task, like from the lawyer's perspective, to get you where you want to be, or you're not going to get tax like savings what you have right now. Like, people don't understand that every time that a tax lawyer review something for you, is not going to end up in millions of dollars going back to you because your structure is perfect and you just did all the right things. And yes, of course, the IRS is happy to pay you back all your refunds and all your deductions. So it's a game of like, hey, well, I mean, yeah, like we can work on this, but at the end of the day, when you, and this, I feel like it happens more with partners when they are trying to sell services, because how we used to understand law practice, even, and I think that this was before 2008 and all the whole economic crisis and everything, like lawyers will have contingency fees. We'll be like, okay, so if we win, or if we actually get this positive letter from the IRS saying that this transaction is good and the whatever regime, tax-free regime applies, then you will get a percentage of how much money that client will be saving. That it doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
It's not even an option. Like, fees are capped. You are not able to like go and say like, okay, so this is gonna take me whatever time of whatever amount of hours is gonna take me to review this, and then the client was like, of course, hey, do it, do what you need. We'll be like, we have budgets, and that restrains a lot how much we can work, and it will be like it's a back and forth relationship between, I don't want to do too much, but also I want to generate value for my client, because if I do too much, that will mean that I'm spending tons of hours that then the client might not be willing to pay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, but I think that does not affect only to tax practice. I feel like that is in general how we see law practice nowadays.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was I going to ask you? Oh, so when I was a child, I wanted to be an astronaut. And I know other kids want to be, you know, soccer players or athletes or doctors or whatever. When you were a child, did you want to be a tax lawyer?
No.
No, you were like the one. They were like.
That would be the no. I would have looked like I did look like a nerd when I was a kid. I feel like I still do. I've been wearing glasses since I was three. Like my parents figured out that I couldn't wear, like I didn't. It was something was not going well, so they were like, okay, so this girl needs glasses. So I was like the little kid with glasses, grew up, got braces, like the whole nerd situation went through. No, never, like my father is a lawyer, and he always talked horrible things about the practice. He is not a tax lawyer. He's more like a corporate attorney, corporate litigator type of practice. He always talked horrible things about the practice. about, he was like, you literally eat, get paid out of people's problems. People have to have problems for you to be able to solve them and get paid. Mm-hmm. Both my brother and I are lawyers. My brother, he's a defense attorney and I'm a tax lawyer. Wow. So we were like, okay, payback. How to be like a rebel child? Okay, I'm gonna do whatever you said that I should have not done.
Yep.
But when I was younger, I wanted to be a veterinary. Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. So. I love animals. This is my thing. I've been riding horses since I was six. So I specifically wanted to be a horse specialist veterinarian.
Oh, wow. Yep. a horse veterinarian out in Northern California. I think he really loved it. But.
Yeah, that would be that. And my mom was like, that's a complicated life. Like, I don't know. Usually like my mom trying to look for us to try to make sure that we had a good future and be well positioned. And she was like, you can like be maybe something a little bit more elevated and then always have horses around it and be taking care of them and all you want. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. I don't have horses though. I would love to, but no.
It's hard in New York City to keep a horse. There's some big apartments, but not that big.
Nope.
So let me ask you one more question before I let you go. And that is, do you have any advice that you like to give other people who are thinking about doing a tax LLM or going into tax practice or maybe advice that's been given to you?
Sure. So I always think about this because I feel like when you are trying to make your little space in a completely different world, which is moving to a different country and start almost like brand new, right? Because I had my life back in Madrid working at Clifford Chance, and then out of the blue I decided, hey, I'm just gonna leave everything behind and I'm just gonna cross the pond, hopefully for good, because I don't want to come back and start from scratch. So you always feel like, oh, because I'm different, I'm coming from a different space, I'm coming from a different country, different culture, then that is going to be a liability for me. But it's not though, because how different you are, and even more so in a world like today that we have, there's people all over the place from everywhere. As an example, New York City is like, there's people from everywhere. You can hear different accents, different languages everywhere. That is kind of like your superpower. Because nowadays, the new like set of skills that you technically already have because you just were born somewhere else, they are valued in a world like that. And law practice is learning from that. It used to be one of the things that I always wanted to go. And when I started tax, I was like, hey, I want to be a tax controversy type of litigator. I want to be a tax litigator. And there's still a gap between there from somebody that is not full like native English speaker than from somebody that has learned to speak learned to speak English out of like years of studying and practicing law and things like that. So there's a gap there. There's law firms don't understand that, or they don't consider that I can be equally good as a litigator than somebody that actually was born in the United States. But apart from like that, there's a little bit of a riffraff, and that even that is getting closer and closer. The rest of law practice in this country like welcomes people with skills assets and people coming from different places of the world. So my advice is like, if you feel like you want to do it, if you feel like you have what it takes, just go for it. Not because, oh, who am I from a small city in the north of Spain that people don't know where is it? I never dreamed that I was going to end up having the life that I had. And like, if I tell my 10-year-old me singing the Backstreet Boys in the shower that I'm going to be living in New York City and working in a great law firm at Street Frank, it will be like, no way. And it just little by little, the steps start falling. And then if you have like a straight path and this is what you want to do, then just go for it. And tax law, it's difficult because it's a specific tax system in this country. And it's not like anything else that you have seen. It just takes time to learn. Everybody has their first day at tax law. Everybody has their first day at everything. So just go.
Thank you. That's really terrific perspective, especially because, I mean, it is a superpower to be multilingual, especially in this day and age. And yet it's still, I think in a lot of ways, it can be viewed through a deficit model or deficit lens, that somehow you're, you know, even the term non-native English speaking suggests a lacking of something when it's really a positive. So thank you for providing all of this wonderful perspective on it. And thank you for taking the time to join us today. We will include any relevant links from this episode in the show notes. And I want to remind our listeners to subscribe to the US Law Essentials podcast on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Himalaya, or wherever you get your podcasts. Where do you get your podcasts?
I have an iPhone, so Apple.
Apple. Okay, great. And you can also listen to all episodes on uslawessentials.com. And if you have any questions, comments, reactions, ideas, et cetera, we always love hearing from our listeners. You can contact us by email at daniel@uslawessentials.com or through the US Law Essentials Facebook group or LinkedIn group. So thank you again, Maria, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Great. Yeah, it's really, I've learned a little bit about tax. Not
but I cannot give you everything, so you're going to still need me. That's the name of the game.
Always need a tax lawyer. We'll always need tax lawyers. Okay, everybody, stay essential.